But that was a very nice introduction. Thank you. Let's see if my lovely PowerPoint's going to work for us. Can you hear me okay? Yeah? Okay. Brilliant. Let's see if it's going to come up for us. So my name is Hannah, and I work for International Justice Mission. It's my absolute pleasure to be here this afternoon. Thank you for inviting me. And what I'm actually aiming to do today, really, is give us a vision of what is possible, not just actually overwhelm you with the darkness of what the reality is and what is happening. We're going to look at some quite difficult subjects and some difficult topics, but my aim is actually to inspire us that there is hope, there is a point in getting involved with these dark issues, because change can come about. And I'm going to show you some of the changes that have already happened, but I'm actually here to ask you to partner with us and join in with seeing these changes come about in the world. As Amber says, there is a part that all of us can play, and it is not to be underestimated that you have a very significant part to play in the fight for justice in the world. So, IJM's mission is to rescue thousands of people out of situations of violent, dark oppression. We do that every year. Thousands of people come out of dark situations because of our work. But more than that, we actually want to prevent people from getting into very dangerous, dark, violent situations in the first place. We want to protect millions of people from ever encountering the kind of situations we're going to talk about today. Because we want to prove that if you are a very poor person, you are a vulnerable person, you still have access to justice. In this country, there are so many things we take for granted. We know that we can get a clean drink of water. We don't think twice about turning on the tap and having a glass of water and knowing that it's not going to kill us. But obviously, we do know that in other countries, people are struggling with that. They don't have access to safe, clean water, and people do die. We understand that there are different levels of poverty around the world. We have poverty in this country, but everyone can get a safe, clean glass of water. We don't necessarily really understand the justice systems, and we don't necessarily understand that what we have here provides a level of protection that we take for granted, and we don't realise how much safer we are than many people who are suffering around the world from violent oppression. In the same way, if something happens to me in this world, in this country, if I was mugged, if I was burgled, I would ring 999 and I would expect someone to come and help me. It may not be a perfect system, we may not have all brilliant police officers, but I would expect there to be some help for me. For most people in the world, that isn't the situation, as we're going to explore today. So, I want to tell you, first of all, a story about a lady called Grace. And I'm going to start by reading a little bit from Psalm 68. A really small bit that just says, "Sing to God, sing in praise of his name, extol him who rides on the clouds. Rejoice before him, his name is the Lord. A father to the fatherless, a defender of widows, is God in his holy dwelling." And I love that bit where it says, God in his holy dwelling. If you get to the very core of who God is, if you got right into heaven, who you would find is a father to fatherless people and a defender of widows. He's somebody who's there to protect and to care and to look after when you get to his core identity. And when we think of, there's so many Bible verses about caring for widows and orphans and vulnerable people, we may think that that's just kind of old-fashioned Old Testament language, looking after widows. But globally, they are still very vulnerable people. Grace is from a district in Uganda called the Makono District, and one in three widows in her community have their land stolen from them when their husband dies. It's a society without any benefits, without any support structures. They don't have bank accounts. If they have their home stolen from them, they lose the land where they grow their food, so they actually can't provide for their children anymore. And Grace, at her husband's funeral, her extended family came and said, right, now we're taking the land back. You don't belong to our family anymore. And they pushed her and their children off the land, and she was left destitute. It is illegal, but what can Grace do? She can't afford to pay for a lawyer. The justice court is very far away from her district, and she was left really struggling for survival. And this is happening around the world. There are about 1.5 billion people who don't have secure access to their land rights. So IJM went in, provided a lawyer for her for free, came and gave her social work support and got her and her family back into her land. We do that for hundreds of widows every year. When I actually went and lived in Uganda for a while, we lived there for about 6 months, and me and my husband and my little girl, who was about one at the time, went to work in a school in Uganda. And we had this really lovely lady from the local church working in our home with us called Esther. And Esther was a widow. She had a 7-year-old daughter. And she was employed to come and help us in the house because I didn't know how to wash my clothes by hand. I didn't know how to use the cooking equipment they had. So she was employed to come and help us. We got burgled. We were a bit of a sitting duck. We were the only white people in a very small rural village. We kind of drew a little bit of attention to ourselves. And we got burgled. They knew that we had money. We had cameras. And we got burgled. What was really shocking for us was that actually when the police got involved, they immediately just suspected our lovely housekeeper, Esther. They said, she is guilty, she can go to prison. There was no trial, there was no evidence, there was no provision for her 7-year-old daughter. Esther's life was about to just be ruined with no consequence. It was basically just the police being lazy and not wanting to do their job properly. So me and my husband then spent the next 3 months wrangling with the police, trying to get her released and out, having to sort out what's going to happen to her daughter. And it made me realise how vulnerable people are when there isn't that level of protection in their society to their lives just being ruined like this. And we understand that with poverty, we need wells, we need houses, we need hospitals, we need schools. But that justice level system actually has to be in place in order for these things to be accessed safely. A second story I wanted to tell you about was Joseph. There's a really good verse in Luke, one of my favourite verses about Jesus, when he's been fairly anonymous up to now. He goes back to his hometown, he stands up in the synagogue, reads this verse from Isaiah and then says, "Today, this is the day it starts, this is my mission." And he says, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favour." So this is his mission. He wants to bring freedom to people. That applies to you and me, and it applies to people actually still today languishing inside prisons where they shouldn't be. Joseph, the man in the photo here, owned a little shop in a slum in Nairobi in Kenya. And one day there was a massive fight going on outside of his shop. He was a Christian. This is his wife and his family. They lived in this slum. He went out to see what the fighting was going on. And he got wounded by a stray bullet. Somebody shot a gun. He was wounded and he went to the local hospital. While he was lying in the hospital to be treated, a policeman was brought into the bed next to him who'd also been injured in the riot. And this policeman was in huge trouble because the fight had happened on his patch. So his superiors came into the hospital and said, "How have you let this happen? Why has this riot happened in your area?" The policeman just turns to Joseph in the bed next to him and said, "He started it." Without any evidence, Joseph goes straight into prison and he's held there for 16 months. He's not had any trial. There's not been any evidence that he's committed this crime. In the meantime, his wife is struggling to survive in the slum. Joseph was the only breadwinner. She was pregnant at the time. She gave birth without Joseph ever having to meet the baby because he was held in prison. And there was never going to be a trial because the policeman had no evidence. And they could kind of fix it so that this guy would never be brought to trial. He would have just stayed in prison for the rest of his life with no evidence. So in that situation, IGM went in, provided a lawyer for Joseph, and immediately got him out. As soon as it came to court, the judge said, "Well, there's no evidence, of course you can go." But had that not happened, he would have been in there still. So this is a very practical application of that vision of Jesus. He actually wants to bring freedom to people who are suffering in many different forms, including in very practical situations like this. So what I was mentioning about this justice system and how it's a kind of level of protection that we take for granted, the UN, the United Nations, did a report that said more than half the world's population, over 4 billion people, do not have a basic level of protection from their justice system. In fact, the police actually probably make life worse for them rather than help. Many of the communities where we work, people run away from the police rather than go to them for help. So this is the kind of situation we're faced with. And some of the issues that we take on work with, we would take on work for victims of sex trafficking and slavery, which is what I want to really focus on today. That's what I'm coming to. We would also take on casework for victims of sexual violence, particularly children. We go in and provide defenders for them. Property grabbing, police abuse of power, and citizenship rights. So quite a few different types of oppression, but the key theme is this abuse of power and this violent oppression. There's a map that you're probably not going to be able to see very clearly, but I just wanted to give you a kind of idea of where we work. We've got 18 offices around the world, and our frontline teams are social workers, lawyers, criminal investigators, church mobilisation people, and community activists. So that you can, if there's a particular part of the world that you're very passionate about finding out about, please do ask me later. But the main issue I really wanted to talk about today, the one that's captured my heart, and mostly Amber's as well, really, the issue of modern-day slavery and human trafficking. This is the reason I got involved with IJM in the first place. Basically, this issue grabbed my heart. I had to go on quite a long journey with God to discover what's my role in this, and it's an ongoing journey. I think once you learn about something like modern-day slavery, it is quite overwhelming at the beginning, and you have to take it to God and journey with him and find out what your role is. And that is a lifelong, ongoing process for all of us. So I'm just going to share a little bit about the situation first and then show you what we do, because so far my response has been, find somebody who's already doing something brilliant and join in with it. That's as far as I've got with my plan. So around 35 million people at the moment in the world today are still held as modern-day slaves. That is more than the entire transatlantic slave trade combined from history. All those people who were shipped from Africa across to Europe on the slave ships, there's more people alive in the world today who are in slavery than back then. These different types of exploitation, why people might be tricked into slavery, they may be forced into the sex industry, they may be forced to working in brothels or in porn films, they may be forced into manual labour where they're working but not being paid and not free to leave. In Greater Manchester, there have been many, many drug raids where the police know that there's a cannabis farm growing in a house. They go in to do a normal drug raid, and instead of finding a gang, typically what they've been finding in Greater Manchester is 7, 8, 9-year-old boys from Vietnam left in charge of these cannabis plants. And they found one child on their own in the house, not being fed properly, not free to leave, no adult looking after them, and they're in charge of growing these cannabis plants. And that's what's fueling the drug trade around Greater Manchester. There's different types. The benefit fraud means that someone is actually legally allowed to claim benefits, but they're being passed on to their trafficker. There's one that looks really terrifying on there, organ harvesting. So far, that hasn't been confirmed in the UK, but globally this is a big issue. Amber has got some hideous stories about this one that really freaked me out earlier, which I'm not actually going to share right now. But there is a market for people who are being moved around and then having organs physically removed from their bodies, which are then sold on black markets. So there's many different reasons why somebody may be trafficked and exploited, but the bottom line is someone is going to make money out of a person. If you are a criminal and you have a weapon to sell, once you've sold your weapon, you need to go and get a new one. If you have drugs to sell, once you've sold them, you need to go and get new drugs. If you have control of a person, you can keep making money out of that person as long as that person's alive. You can get their labour in many different forms, and you've got a very valuable asset if you have control of someone. And the methods that people are using to control their victims are very different to the olden days. They may not be physical chains that are locking people together. It may be that they've got control of their passports. It may be that there are threats on their families back home. And there's one lady I know from Nigeria who was trafficked into the UK, and she escaped from the brothel where she was forced into prostitution. But the traffickers communicated back through their networks, and her father back in her village in Nigeria was killed because she had escaped. So there's real threats of violence on family members for trafficked victims. And there's many different ways that people will get control of their people. But what are we? We are people of vision who can see any bonds can be broken and chains of oppression can be broken. So I want to show you what we do in response to this. Oh, actually, in the UK, we have a system called the National Referral Mechanism. This is our system for monitoring how many people we know of that have been trafficked into the UK. Last year, there were nearly 2,500 people who went into our official system who were potential victims of trafficking. And that will be the tip of the iceberg, because there will be many more who aren't discovered. And there will be others who, even if they are discovered, as I was talking with you earlier, even if they're discovered, they're going to be frightened of getting any official help because they don't know that they can trust our authorities. So that's going to be a very tip of the iceberg, that they're the ones that we do know about from last year. What we would do in any of these situations, whether we're talking about widows' land rights or the trafficking, we have four main goals. The first priority is rescuing the people out of these situations. I want to talk specifically about the sex trafficking work because that's the one that grabs my heart. If we want to go in and rescue people out of a sex trafficking situation, we would focus on people under the age of 18. Because there's no country in the world where it is legal to have children working in the sex trade. So we would have undercover investigators who have a hidden camera, who go into very dark places, go into commercial establishments, collect evidence that there are children being held in there. With that evidence, we need to work out who in the local police can we trust, who isn't corrupt, who isn't going to tip off the brothel owners and go in and do an actual rescue operation with them. So that's the first step. We actually want to get people into safety. We've done that for over 18,000 people since we started. Second thing we want to do is actually bring the criminals to justice. Again, very practical and tangible reality of seeing change happen. Slavery and trafficking happens in places where it's very easy for someone to be a slave owner or a trafficker. In India, for example, you are more likely to be struck by lightning than ever go to prison for owning slaves. It's a massive endemic problem where people are owning and buying and trafficking across global situations. But once people start going to prison, numbers do go down. Once it's not as easy, not as profitable, once there are consequences, people do turn to other things. Restoring survivors is a very key part where you actually, you know, somebody's come out from slavery into freedom. There's a big journey for them ahead. With the sex trafficking work, if we're talking about 5, 6, 7-year-old children, massive work for the social workers to assess, is it safe for them to go back home? Were the family involved in them being exploited or were they kidnapped? Or how can we work with the families to make sure that they're safe? Or do they need to go into an aftercare home and have long-term support? So each type of situation will have different responses for the survivors, but that's therapists, aftercare workers and social workers. And the main real reason what we want to do is strengthen the justice system to make it harder for these crimes to happen in the first place. I wanted to show you this photo. This is a photo of one of our undercover investigators going into a brothel on a rescue operation with the local police and carrying a child out of these dark places. The youngest child that we've ever rescued out of a brothel was 5 years old. And this is happening to over 2 million children around the world. We know that there is child abuse that happens in homes. And then there's this other level that I want to talk about today where it is organised criminal gangs who organise themselves around buying and selling children for rape and abuse and profit for financial gain. I want to tell you the story of Mien. Mien was a girl that we work with in Cambodia and she was 13 years old when her mother, who was very much struggling to survive, she had 5 younger children to support. Someone came to their village and basically took advantage of their poverty and said to the mother, I've got a job for your daughter, let her come with me to the city. So Mien went to the city with this man who took her to a brothel. He locked her in the brothel, in the back room, and then different clients started to bid to be her first client, to be her first customer, at the age of 13. And the reason I wanted to share this story is that the people who were bidding to be her first clients were British people. They were Westerners who know that if they travel somewhere like Cambodia, somewhere like Thailand, somewhere where they think they will get away with things more easily, they can actually have access to children more easily. So Mien was hidden in this brothel for 5 years, and then IJM collected evidence that this brothel was holding children, worked with local police and went in and did a rescue operation. And we got 35 children out of this brothel in one day. Mien was one of the ones who came out. She went into our aftercare home, and one of the things that had kept her there, one of the reasons she hadn't run away before the escape, the rescue operation, was that she didn't believe that there was anything else for her. Her traffickers had told her, this is your destiny, this is all you are worth, there's nothing else for you, you'll be in trouble with the police if you try and get help. Had she been trafficked to the UK, would she have known that our police would help her? Would she have believed that they would be on her side when she'd seen police coming into the brothel, taking money off the brothel owners? She wouldn't necessarily know that our police would be any different or help her. But she came out and she went into our aftercare home and she has had a transformed life. This girl did actually become a Christian. She has got her own business. She's a tailor now, and this is a shirt that she's made that she's holding up. She's actually got married, and her old brothel is now a community centre that she goes back and volunteers in. That whole brothel has been shut down. And in Cambodia generally, and when we first started working there, our investigators didn't even have to try to find kids that were available to buy. You could walk down the street and there would be primary school age children available to buy for sex openly on the street. This was partly because the Khmer Rouge had come in and had wiped out a whole generation of people who were law enforcement, who could actually do the job of law enforcement. Many different agencies have been working in Cambodia for many years. IJM was one of them. And last year we did a study that since we've been working there, since we've done the rescue operations, the training of officials, putting people in prison for their crimes, the numbers have reduced dramatically. Now, less than 1% of people in the commercial sex industry in the areas where we work are 15 or under. Less than 1%, whereas it used to be at least 40, 50%. Sometimes people ask me, does that not just mean the children have been hidden? But actually, if our investigators can't find them, neither can any of the customers, because you have to be able to find them to exploit them. And our investigators are really well-trained, excellent professionals who can find them if any other customers can find them too. So change actually is possible in a whole community. Some of our offices are reaching the stage of Cambodia where we've actually seen such a big change, we can almost start to wind down operations, which then releases funds to go and start new projects. We've just opened an office this year in Ghana, where on Lake Volta, there's a huge fishing industry, and this is old-school slavery. Our investigators, I stayed with the guy who went and did the investigations here. He basically posed as a Western businessman with a big fishing industry here, and he went over to Lake Volta and pretended that he was going to invest in some local industries in Ghana. And he actually had hidden cameras on him. He went out on all the boats, and he discovered slavery on this lake. But what he saw were children chained up in old-fashioned slave markets for sale on the side of the lake. And he found these boys diving down to the bottom of the lake, wrangling with nets, many stories of them drowning. You can see how muscly they are, despite how young they are. And actually, we can change that. The Ghanaian government have invited us to go in, be part of changing that situation, because they've seen how we've worked in other parts of the world. And so we'd love your prayer support for, if we can make that big change there, how many other places can we replicate eradicating slavery? So, what I really wanted to do was not really tell you what I want you to do, but more kind of throw out there that there is stuff happening that you can get involved with and ask you to just have a bit of a prayer journey with God about what you could do to be part of helping end slavery, helping bring in justice in the world. Obviously, many people will want to respond locally and have an impact on their community, and I think that's right. But I would ask you to also stretch your horizons and realise that this is a global industry and we have to respond locally and globally because people are trafficked across international borders. The biggest thing that you can do is be a prayer partner, because without the prayer support, these operations fail. We had one story, for example, in India. We had a bus ready with all our staff going into a brick kiln factory where we knew there were hundreds of families, literally hundreds of families working in slavery. We went to the brick kiln facility and the slave owner knew we were coming. He'd had a tip off. He got all his village around him, all his relatives, and they started attacking the bus, shaking the bus, attacking the bus. And all our staff, at the end of the day, all they could do actually was sit and pray. And they said the most amazing thing happened. Suddenly, chaos descended on the crowd. There was huge confusion. They started fighting each other, and then they all just drifted off. Not a single person was left. The bus drove into the brick kiln facility, and hundreds of people came out of slavery that day. So there's that moment when, despite all the preparation, all the planning, all the career development that the teams have done, it comes down to prayer at the bottom line. So I'd love you to come up and sign up for a prayer update that comes out once a month, and just to commit for praying for our investigators, praying for the survivors, and we tell you what operations are coming up, what offices need what prayer, and we'd love that support. That's a really key, simple thing you could do. There's fundraising. Money is a fabulous way to get involved if you feel that that's something you have got or would like to do. Volunteering. Amber is one of my superstar volunteers, and I really appreciate different ways that you can get involved with connecting, helping raise awareness, doing work in schools with young people, the stuff we can do for a local response and a global response. And then we've got resources on the website that you can look at too that might help you with looking at your local area. So that's really what I wanted to share. I hope that's been of some interest and inspiration. And the main thing really is just thinking, okay, this is happening. There's this awful issue. There's lots of people trying to respond. How do we connect and join up? What part can I play? Is it just looking into what I buy and checking that I'm not buying slave labour products? Is it something more time consuming where I want to give some of my hours? Is it something financial? Is it prayer support? Is it a lifelong career? Do I really want to throw my whole life and my passion into this and train up and become somebody who does this as part of my life? So I kind of just want to leave that with you and ask you to go on a journey with that. But thank you so much for having me. It's really nice to be invited. So thank you. I think I'll leave it there if that's all right.